I've always been interested in the Civil War from long, long ago. And my journey in the economics of the Civil War started with a little one-line footnote in my dissertation, which my dissertation committee thought that that was the most important thing in my entire dissertation. It eventually became an article that was published in the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, many other articles, a book on tariffs, blockades, and inflation, which I looked at economic analysis of what was going on in terms of the Confederate government. But I always wanted to do this paper, and I appreciate Tom DiLorenzo and Lou Rockwell and the Mises Institute putting on this conference and all the donors who really make it possible. Like I said, it's been decades that I've been thinking about this particular paper. Let's see if I'm, no. Okay, it's called The Confederate Defeat of the South, the Vicksburg Campaign. So this will be a revisionist look at the Civil War, but not in terms of the righteous cause of the North or the lost cause of the South, but more of the brass tacks of, in this battle of David versus Goliath, the underdog South versus the superpower North, what was the outcome? And what I'm going to argue here today and show to you is that Vicksburg, Mississippi, was really the key event of the entire Civil War, something that the American public has been misled by the righteous cause of the Union in terms of that Gettysburg was certainly the, you know, the midpoint of the war and that that really decided everything. What I would argue from the point of economics and military strategy is that Gettysburg was really much to do about nothing. And really Vicksburg is the key to understanding the outcome of the American Civil War. Now, Vicksburg, Mississippi, I thought that everybody would kind of understand that point, the importance in the battle. This is a little map of the Vicksburg campaign, at least the primary aspects of the Vicksburg campaign, but Vicksburg is due west from Auburn, on the Mississippi River. To the north is Memphis, Tennessee, St. Louis, Missouri, and then there really are no other cities further north than St. Louis. To the northeast is Chattanooga, the rest of Tennessee, Kentucky, etc. Going north to the southeast is Mobile, due south is New Orleans, and then southwest is like Galveston, Texas. So to orient you as to where all of this is and why Vicksburg was the key to the war, Vicksburg effectively blocked the Union on the Mississippi at that point. This provided the South with economic logistics. It provided the South with local production, a relatively war-free zone in Mississippi and the surrounding states, as well as tactical positions for the Confederate military. It also prevented Union incursions into this entire area, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, etc. If you opened it up, it would provide an avenue for Union incursion into the South. It would provide naval unification for the Union Navy and allow for all sorts of taking of cotton and slaves and so forth in the area. And most importantly for Lincoln, politically, it would open up world markets for Midwestern grain sales, which had been boggled up as a result of Vicksburg. Now, the what's at stake here is that this war and Grant's success, this is where Grant becomes the main general for Lincoln. This is where Grant becomes the number one military officer in the Union. This is where his reckless risk-taking behavior really takes hold and then sets the stage, not just for the rest of the Civil War, but for U.S. wars moving forward. The American Battlefield Trust, in their famous documentary video on the Vicksburg campaign, noted in the conclusion that, quote, only in the coming decades would Grant's accomplishment at Vicksburg be recognized. Late into the 20th century, coalition forces in the first Gulf War were still using tactics inspired by Grant's Vicksburg campaign. So in the battle between David and Goliath, where Goliath is seen to win this battle, it sets the stage for the use of overwhelming force and on the part of the Goliaths of this world, and in particular, the United States itself. And in terms of the Battle of Vicksburg, although largely neglected even by historians, the Western Front in the Civil War was just as decisive in the final outcome. And this, I'm going to show here today, was the result of a failure of Southern ideology as manifested in its economic and military policy. So what we're going to see here is the difference between military tactics, military strategy, and the grand strategy that the Davids of the world and the Goliaths of the world can use to better enhance their chance of final victory. This whole story is downplayed in general histories, but the Western Front, centered around Vicksburg, was considered the ultimate prize by both Union leaders, including Abraham Lincoln, who was from Illinois, just north of here. He was very familiar with the area, very familiar with Vicksburg and the formidable defensive position it provided. And of course, President Davis of the Confederacy was from Mississippi and realized the importance, the strategic location and defensive military position that Vicksburg provided, and the resulting economic benefits, the widespread economic as well as military benefits, both strategic and tactical. So this is very, very important. If you went to Vicksburg, Mississippi today, you'd probably be thoroughly unimpressed. It's not a big industrial town. It's not a big manufacturing base. Nothing of the kind. It's a small city on the meandering Mississippi River, and you'd be hard-pressed to realize what everybody really knew back in the time of the American Civil War. Now, I'm going to present here a little bit of military strategy theory, as well as just a little bit of economic theory to back up my economic analysis of how the Confederacy was defeated in this battle, which ultimately led to their overall military defeat and collapse. In terms of strategy, I talk about the underdog strategy. What would an underdog do in the face of a Goliath, of an overwhelming military opponent? And the Confederacy realized some aspects of this from a military sense. They realized that they needed to defend Vicksburg, that it was a strong defensive position which they could, you know, prevent Union gunships and Union transports and commercial ships from using the Mississippi, and that they could fight a defensive war around that city and hold off the Union forces, which they did for 2 years. I came across a rather famous military strategist named B.H. Liddell Hart, a British military strategist who wrote a very important book called Strategy in 1929. He placed much less emphasis on generals and battles and paints a very much more general view of war as a battle to achieve the art of distributing and applying military means to the fulfillment of the ends of policy. And I got to thinking, you know, that sounds suspiciously like what Ludwig von Mises was writing about, beginning with his famous book on socialism, but throughout his writings in the 1920s, where Mises defined economics as a science of ends and means, where the economist is looking at how well we apply our means to achieve our ends. The economist doesn't choose the end, but we analyze how well the means are used to achieve the ends, and that's where socialism falls flat, right? And so Liddell Hart's analysis of military strategy is very, very similar, suspiciously similar to what Mises and Lionel Robbins were writing about in the 1920s, and then Lionel Robbins' famous 1932 book put forward this idea of economics as the science of ends and means, which has become the defining characteristic of economics. It's not attributed to Mises, but that's essentially where it comes from. So Vicksburg, in the military sense, was defended along the same lines that the underdog strategy would suggest. So it was militarily correct for them to try to hold Vicksburg. It was their general strategy, their grand strategy, that was really at fault. And I suggest that the organization of the Confederate government and the subsequent military strategy adopted and the policies that resulted led to the defeat. This failure can be blamed on an insufficient ideological commitment from Southern leaders, politicians, and citizens to the concepts of liberalism and the free market economy. This in turn resulted in an over-reliance on the policies of war socialism in their grand strategy. The dominance of Confederate political leadership and military leadership were likewise problematic in that it was thoroughly imbued with the West Point philosophy of war. So the West Point philosophy of war and the general philosophy of war is you try to get the biggest army as possible on the field, and then you have them collide and maneuver and see who wins out, with the idea that whoever has the largest army, the strongest army, the best guns and so forth will win out. So it's like a game of chess more than anything else. And Liddell Hart would argue that no, this is not the case. Liddell Hart comes in the tradition that starts in Eastern philosophy, like of Sun Tzu in his book, The Art of War, where things like deception, strategic retreats, surprise attacks, ambushes, and so forth. The modern phraseology for all of this is asymmetric warfare. And this has obviously become a very, very important with modern day Davids on the battlefield, on the political battlefield as well. I go through and explain Mises' perspective on war, and here I'll just note that he made the obvious observation that the capitalist countries have a strategic advantage over non-capitalist countries. The more free market you are, the better guns you'll produce, the more food, ammunition, and so forth that you can produce and outproduce your opponent. That's what allowed the United States in the world wars to supply Britain and Russia and you know their allies and so forth with all the material means of war as well as their own national war effort to overcome Germany so forth and Japan, which were more organized along socialist organization of their economy and of their military efforts. So at this point, the heart of the matter, really, of this paper and what intrigued me so much about Grant's Vicksburg campaign was the Confederate policy of impressment. Now, impressment is basically when the government comes up to you and steals your stuff. Okay, they're impressing it for the war effort. And this went on before there was a legislated policy of impressment in the South, so that Confederate officials, Confederate military officers could just walk up to a store or a farm or a warehouse and take what they needed and write out a piece of paper that said, the Confederacy owes you one on this. This policy was widely hated by Southerners. Historians say, well, yes, it caused all sorts of problems. It was a violation of people's rights. It was a violation of states' rights. It was bad, it was bad, it was bad. But, you know, we had these evil speculators and hoarders out there, and therefore the government had to do something in order to acquire the means to fight the war. And so they did this, and they did this on a large scale. Now, what does this mean in terms of the actual battlefield? Well, first of all, impressment means that whoever the supplier is going to lose money. You're getting paid below market weight prices, so you're not going to be very happy about that. You're going to be impoverished as a result of that. You're going to try to hide your production in the future from the government. You're going to try to withhold it from the marketplace or wherever government Confederate officials are. You're going to change what you're producing so as maybe so that the Confederate officials don't want what you're producing. Or you're just going to produce less of it. So whatever you can say on the positive side of impressments, it impoverishes the producers, it distorts their production, and it reduces overall production. As far as the impressment officers and the military, they're much more likely to overconsume what they're taking. Okay, so if you're a captain or whatever, and you're taking your troops to point X on a map, and you need to acquire supplies, well, if all you have to do is write your name on a piece of paper, and you've got unlimited paper and your name's not running out, you might just be buying too much and you may waste it. And you'll see this in campaign after campaign after campaign, is that the Confederate armies would leave supplies and munitions and guns and so forth on the battlefield to be taken or destroyed by Union forces. So there was a lot of waste in that policy. All the idea that somehow, you know, this is overcoming the problem of hoarders and speculators really pales when you do just a little bit of economic analysis. And then, of course, you add in runaway inflation. So say you're a producer and somebody takes your stuff and gives you a piece of paper that says, we're going to pay you 1,000 Confederate dollars. Well, by the time you get your hands, where you can turn in that piece of paper for the $1,000, with runaway inflation, the value of that $1,000 could have depreciated to virtually nothing. So really, this amounts to just plain old-fashioned stealing from producers. So what happens really on the verge of Grant's Vicksburg campaign? First of all, Grant tries everything. He tried invading from the northeast. He tried invading directly from the north. He tried running gunboats down the Mississippi with supporting land forces. He tried moving to the other side of the river, trying to get around Vicksburg, all sorts of avenues with respect to trying to get at Vicksburg. He tried just about every conceivable approach to Vicksburg, and he got nowhere against an undersized garrison with a limited supporting force, you know, things like cavalry, mobile artillery, those kind of things. They were rather easily set back. And finally, Grant undertook what was the riskiest possible approach to solving the Vicksburg dilemma. Lincoln was breathing down his neck to get something done, and he had spent basically in the Western theater, the generals had spent 2 years and had gotten virtually nowhere. So Grant concocts this scheme. He doesn't think a whole lot of it. General Sherman, his lieutenant, thinks it's too risky to undertake. and so there's a lot of depredation about this approach, which basically involves the Mississippi is in light and it's meandering up to Vicksburg and then up into Tennessee. There's the Yazoo River off to the right. So this whole area is very, very swampy. There's no good roads. There's not a lot of railroads. Obviously no airports or anything like that. So Grant decides to bypass the entire thing through Louisiana. So he moves his troops around south of Vicksburg down to here with plans to invade southern Mississippi. And then the Navy flotilla is going to come down past Vicksburg. It's going to get shot up but survive and meet Grant down here at Grand Gulf and at Bruinsburg and then slip into the state of Mississippi side here at and attack Port Gibson. The problem with this notion is you're moving 50,000 soldiers and you don't have any good supply lines. In other words, it takes several weeks to move overland to get down to this point. And if it starts raining again, you may not be able to get any supplies through. So it's a very precarious supply route that the Southerner, that the Confederates can attack. And you get down here, and your goal is Vicksburg up there, but this is also a swamp, and you've got to cross a big river. So Grant decides to go in and attack the state capital at Jackson. Now, where does the impressment policy come into play here? Well, just think back to the analysis. If you're a producer, you don't want to bring your product to market, because if you bring it to Vicksburg, you bring it to Jackson, they're just going to take it. And they're going to give you a funny piece of paper, which isn't going to be worth much in a matter of weeks or days or months. So, and I'm still looking into the details of this. But what I'm arguing here, and what General Grant and particularly General Sherman was worried about, is how are we going to supply the Union Army of 50,000 soldiers once we leave Port Gibson on up to Vicksburg, or in this case, Jackson, railroading it over to Vicksburg. Well, what they found was that there was plenty of food, plenty of supplies, plenty of materials for the taking in the countryside of Vicksburg. All the farms, all the plantations were just loaded with grain and sweet potatoes and animals of all sorts, as well as cotton and so forth, so that the countryside of Mississippi was ripe with the materials necessary for a very large army to forage. And of course, there was plenty of grass for the horses and just about everything else. They chase General Johnston into Jackson. Johnston abandons Jackson. Grant and Sherman take Jackson. They resupply themselves there, and then they head due west into Vicksburg along the railroad. Pemberton's army, who's in charge at Vicksburg, retreats into the city of Vicksburg. As a last-ditch effort, he orders trenches dug on their eastern front, and he orders all animals that the Confederate Army finds to be herded into the city of Vicksburg, sort of as a last-ditch effort. But basically, from what I can tell, the siege of Vicksburg lasts only 47 days. And most of that is where the citizens are consuming those, in the army, the Confederate Army are consuming those animals that they drove in. But that the warehouses and cupboards of the city of Vicksburg were essentially empty. That they hadn't planned for any kind of long, prolonged siege. Despite the fact that Vicksburg, you can see the railroad line that goes into Louisiana and Texas. This is where the Confederacy in the South were getting a lot of their beef, salt, molasses, lead, and various other things. So they were right on the direct supply line, and yet, when it came to the siege, they didn't have any food stored up, and so people started starving immediately. They put the army on half rations and then quickly on quarter rations. They didn't have enough munitions, gunpowder, shells, all of the things that you would think you would want to store and that would naturally be stored. I mean, if I was a hoarder, speculator, entrepreneur, and I was hoarding and speculating on wheat or flour or salt or whatever it was, I would want it in the warehouses of Vicksburg protected from Union forces. And yet, because of impressment policies, everything was basically empty as a result. And so the defensive siege effort, where Grant surrounds Vicksburg and starts shelling it, is incredibly effective. The Confederates, the city of Vicksburg, didn't have enough food. People began starving, and they didn't have enough ammunition to fight back. And so while they were being shelled on a regular basis, they didn't really have enough to fire back. And so they were short, particularly on food and ammunition, which, gosh, I mean, I'm not a military planner or anything, but you would think those would be the two things highest on the list. And so what we see is that if, can we go to the next slide on this? Yeah, here. So this is the same map in the same track. And basically what I would argue is that an asymmetric warfare strategy, you would have seen the Confederates basically attacking the Union forces at every crossroad on this map. They would have set up delaying actions. They would have come from behind and disrupted their supply lines. And most importantly, they would have been in front of the Union, destroying all those supplies on the farms and on the plantations, et cetera, so that the instead of the Union Army being able to forage and live off the land, that they would have run into a dearth of local supplies, and that the Confederates would have been cutting off the supply base down here on the Mississippi through Port Gibson. So Grant was getting supplies through here, and magically they were able to follow all the way up without any Confederate harassment. So the Confederates didn't seem to understand this, but the implications of the impressment policy, which is obviously not a free market policy at all, meant that Grant was able to undertake this incredibly risky maneuver, make it succeed, and become the leading general of Union forces from which he unleashed his wrath of, you know, the Goliath big player killing, you know, many innocent civilians. He and Sherman adopted these policies and killing lots of the opposing soldiers as well as their own men. They just realized that this process, this approach to war where you just use superior strength and just dominate your opponent, and you have a scorched earth policy with respect to, you know, just taking whatever you want, destroying whatever you need. But ultimately at the base of it, this incredibly important strategic event in the Civil War that I would argue decided the outcome of the war was basically the result of a failure to follow the grand strategy that follows a free market ideology. Thank you very much.